listening to the Fearless Kitchen Podcast. And now it's time to join your host, Vanessa Baxter.
I'll take what's good. Ooh, 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 ooh. Ooh, ooh, what's good. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Hey guys, I am here again, Vanessa Baxter, with the Fearless Kitchen Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcast.com. And I am going to do a little solo episode for you guys today. And I've had some people ask me questions about myself and my travels and where I've been and what I've done. And I was leading them to the podcast, and I thought maybe I need to do a few more little episodes about where I've lived overseas and the different foods that I have managed to experience thanks to those amazing opportunities of being able to live and cook overseas. So today, I thought I would talk about my time in Switzerland, where I was lucky enough to go and live in Klosters. And this was with the family that I had originally worked for in the States. And when the time came for me to go home, they didn't want me to go home. They wanted to take me to Switzerland with them. And as you can imagine, I did have to put some thought into it because I was obviously going to stay on longer and I had to change my plans. And at that stage, I was 29 and I had things to think about, you know, is that really what I wanted to do? But at the end of the day, they were talking about a 4 or 5 month trip to Switzerland to hang out with them, to cook. And they sweetened the deal by letting me know that they would buy me a season ski pass to the slopes and I'd have a huge opportunity to learn to ski in Switzerland, which sounded pretty amazing to me. So I jumped on that plane and went over to Switzerland, and they had this amazing chalet in Klosters itself, just walking distance from the little wee village. And I got there before them and set up the house for them and kind of opened it all up and got it all organized. And we took a golden retriever as well. So I had my gorgeous companion Ivanhoe while I was there, and that was just amazing. And I started to pop into the village, of course, and suss out where all the yummy foods were and where I was going to be able to go shopping. And just down the track from where the chalet was, there was also a little bakery, and that was where I was instructed to buy fresh breads every morning. And it was almost like a dairy, to be honest, a corner shop. And it had like all sorts of packaged produce and stuff in there as well. But every morning there was fresh bread, and there were so many different varieties. And I would trudge down in my snow boots and purchase all the different little bits and pieces of small bread rolls, Swiss bread rolls, and bring them back. And it was amazing, actually, because this family in the States didn't eat bread. They really didn't. They weren't big on bakery items. They weren't big on bread. They really loved their fresh food. But then when they got to Switzerland, they just completely went Swiss. And I loved that. I loved that they immersed themselves in the culture of where they were and just went, hey, while we're in Switzerland, we eat as the Swiss do. And then when we go back to the States, we eat summer, you know, salads and lovely fresh seafood from Cape Cod. So it was really cool. And it was exciting for me because it meant that I was able to shop local and understand the produce of Switzerland myself. So, of course, I already, thanks to my mum introducing us to fondue when we were kids, I already knew all about the fondue. But I have to say, there's something special about eating those foods that come from a place and eating them in that place. So being able to go to a restaurant or a bar in Switzerland and sit down and actually have their fondue. And of course, once I got better at skiing, I was able to eat things like that on the top of the mountain. And it just seemed so decadent. And even looking back on it, it's almost like a dream. I can't believe it was actually me and that it was for real, that I lived in that place and ate and skied and did all the things that I did. But the fondue was amazing. You know, it was always this divine melting pot of Gruyere cheese and Vacheron cheese and wine and garlic, and it bubbled away over its little individual flame, and you dunk rustic, crusty, crunchy country bread into these cheeses and just, oh, it was so divine. And I don't ever remember there being little sticks of carrots or celery around, and maybe there were, but for me it was all about dunking those little cubes of bread into that molten, delicious melting pot of cheese. And such a great way to warm up in those colder months. It was so delicious. And then I also had, of course, the opportunity to try the rösti. And my understanding of rösti was simply, you know, grated potatoes, and you kind of pan fry them into this crispy sort of dish. And I guess in Australia, I'm trying to think back, I think that you could buy rösti, and they were, but it was kind of almost like, I don't know, it was almost like a side breakfast dish. I never understood that rösti could be an entire meal to itself until I hit those mountains in Switzerland and watched people order it for lunch and thought, that is the best ski food. You know, you've been charging down mountains, or in my case, tumbling down them and walking sideways back up again and tumbling down them again and walking sideways back up. And that's just the beginner slopes to start with. And so by the time it got to lunch, you know, this steaming, gorgeous potato dish in its own little ceramic bowl delivered up, and it was sort of like this, always topped with salty bacon, and you could choose to have fried egg on the top, and there would be a raclette cheese melted all over it, and some gherkins and onions, and it was, oh my goodness, it was so lush. And I remember to start with thinking, there's no way I can get through this entire helping alone, but it got to the point where I was quite happy to sit and have these oven-baked rösti cakes for lunch on the top of the mountains, and then get my energy up and go back down. And I vividly remember eating one with some friends that I'd made one day, and then coming out, and I was so proud of myself because I'd made it up to one of the restaurants that was really high up on the mountain. So I'd managed to get my, you know, to ski down and work my way up, and then ski down, work my way up, and to be confident enough to go all the way up to this restaurant and know that I had to ski out of there to kind of get back down again. And I was so proud of myself, and I'm sure I tumbled most of the way down that black run from the top to the next kind of like break, or at least very poor skiing. But I still remember being incredibly proud of myself, and also I remember that I'd had that rösti, and somehow it gave me the courage and the strength to keep going, which is pretty funny. And while we're talking about the melty cheese, of course, we can't go past that raclette. I am not a huge fan of raclette myself. I don't quite get it, but the family that I cooked for, they absolutely loved having raclette parties, and they had the whole raclette set, and everyone had their own little individual way to melt the cheese, and you know, everyone would grill their own little bits of cheese and wait for the slices to melt and drink their white wine and cover their, you know, bits of gherkins and pickled onions and little bits of tomatoes and potatoes, and that would be the meal. And I couldn't quite get it, but what I did understand was it was a great communal feast again. So similar to the fondue, just slightly different premise, and it was a real way of bringing people together around the table and laughing and enjoying the meal together in a much more collaborative way than just serving up plates of food. And it was super easy for me because often in Switzerland, I mean, I was really spoilt because I had to do every breakfast. So that was fine. I literally had to wake up every single morning, be with it, get to the shop, buy the nice bread, come back. But it was pretty simple. It was really more, you know, making sure the table was set and all these lovely fresh produce breads and all the things they wanted to go with it were on the table, and then clean up afterwards. If they were not, they always had lunch on the mountain. So my day was for me. If they were having friends over for dinner or having a dinner party or staying home, then it was up to me to cook for them. But I always knew that in advance. If they were not, and they were very, very social in Switzerland, and so often they would be heading out for dinner to other people's places because that was the social way they moved around between their friends, and everyone kind of had cooks on the premises. So, you know, one of us would be cooking and the others would all be down at the bar having a drink and enjoying their night off. So if it was my night off, I then knew that and I would take that opportunity to ski. So those were the days I would ski, but if I knew I was cooking in the evening, then I would forgo the skiing and put in the prep during the day. But if it was something simple like a raclette, I was pretty relaxed, really. So the entire time I was in Switzerland, I did cook up some pretty impressive meals at times, and I had a tiny, weeny little kitchen to cook out of in a little chalet. But my goodness, the experience was extraordinary, and I look back and just think how exceptionally lucky I was to have happened upon that opportunity, and I really, really, truly, absolutely loved every minute of it. So the other thing that I really loved while I was over there was the amazing smoked salmon. So that was the first time I had ever seen an entire side of salmon smoked, and my employers would get a horse and cart at times up to the end of the road to go and see the guy that would smoke the salmon. And so I would jump on this cart to go up to purchase the salmon, in particular around Christmas and New Year, when they wanted to serve the whole side of salmon to their friends. And they would serve it almost like in a Russian way. So we would have tiny little capers, and we'd have almost like a sauerkraut, sour cream type thing on the side, and gherkins, and all these little gorgeous little like chopped up shallots and red onion. So almost like a caviar style dish. It was amazing. I absolutely loved that as well. And there's tartiflette, which is kind of almost like the rösti, but it's a kind of a rustic plate of thinly sliced potatoes rather than grated potatoes, with bits of bacon and caramelized onions. And of course, I can't think how to pronounce the cheese now. Reblochon. Someone can email me and tell me that was an appalling recollection of my Swiss cheeses. I remember eating veal a lot in Switzerland. That was amazing. You know, like veal sautéed, so yummy, with butter and white wine and cream and mushrooms. That was pretty good. And I remember lots of braised meats in red wine, you know, slow cooked and kind of fork pulled apart. That was also a pretty yummy thing to eat while we were there. And leeks and sausages and potatoes. There were so many dishes that kind of based themselves around potatoes and breads. That was kind of interesting to see what the diet was. And I think that was definitely because I was there in winter, and it was all about dining with friends and keeping yourself warm and keeping up your energy, of course, for downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, and all the other outdoor activities that the Swiss participate in. Now, the other thing about Switzerland, of course, is their divine desserts and their little cafes and pastry shops. Unfortunately, Switzerland, for me, was not about slimming. I just enjoyed my food, and I enjoyed my rich desserts loaded with calories, and I thought I will just worry about it later. In fact, I don't even know if I thought about it. I don't even think I did, which is pretty funny for me. considering my background of worrying perpetually about food and what I'm putting into my body. But in this case, it was just amazing, too hard to resist. And there were the gorgeous, like, gingerbreads, which I absolutely loved, which would have like honey inside or jam inside. They were amazing. And then there were like pastry sort of sweet hazelnut dessert croissant-y bagel-y things, and again that was sort of sweetened with honey, which was gorgeous. And then there were the places that had the bircher muesli, which was so divine and made with lots of fruit and quark. And quark, oh, quark is divine. And it's kind of like a soured cream / cream cheese, and that is just mixed in with the oats and the apple juice and the fresh berries and things, which I absolutely loved as well. The pastry shops and the cake shops were really, really absolutely divine. And on the days that I didn't ski, it was quite a treat to be able to go and just sit in a little cafe where it was nice and warm, and to have like a slice of Swiss roll or a little creme brulee and all of those divine European style rich desserts. I mean, it was such a treat to be able to eat like that in that environment. The other thing I loved was the walking. You really could just walk everywhere, and in spite of the snow, because it was Switzerland and they really do take care of the pathways and the environment, there's just an opportunity to be outside in spite of the weather all the time. And my host family or my employer and I would occasionally, you know, go out together on a Sunday, and we would walk around these amazing lakes and then end up somewhere for lunch. And it was amazing because the dog was welcome anywhere. So the dog would come into the restaurant and sit under the table, and they had dog food for the dogs at the door. And that was kind of really cool. And then, of course, if we didn't go out to eat and we're having more of a casual day, I would find some Swiss chocolate to enjoy, because of course Swiss chocolate is in itself absolutely divine. So I always had a little bounty of Swiss chocolate as a treat as well. Sausages, potatoes, cheese, chocolate and pastries. That was kind of the order of the day for about 5 months for me. And the entire trip and journey and food experience really was eye-opening, extraordinary, and something that I rate as, you know, one of those moments in my life that I could have missed had I just said no, that that was going to be too hard. And I'm so glad that, again, I was incredibly fearless and just said, absolutely, I'm coming to Switzerland and all that it will offer. One thing I did find totally amusing in Switzerland were all the rules. So that was a long time ago that I was in Switzerland, like 20 years ago. And it was the first time, for example, that I'd ever seen a car park where you had to type in your registration number and the number of the parking space that you had parked in. And I kept getting it wrong, so I kept getting fines. That was particularly annoying. The other thing that I found amusing was that they would have these amazing walks and things, which I had just been describing to you guys, and you could walk around the lake or you could walk up a mountain, and it explained how long the walk would be and how long it would take you and where it was heading. And but there were hours that you were allowed to go on the walk. It was so bizarre because it was nature. But you couldn't walk between certain hours of the day, and you could you needed to rest. And then you could commence your walk at 3 p.m. And often we might get there before 3 p.m. in the car, like at 10 to 3 or quarter to 3, and we'd just start walking, being an American and an Australian. And the Swiss would literally wait, and they'd be horrified at us just walking down the path at quarter to 3. And they would wait until it
hit 3 o'clock on their watch, and then they would start walking to honour the sign at the edge of the pathway. And I still can't get my head around that. So if you are Swiss and you are listening to this podcast and you can give me a really reasonable explanation as to why we shouldn't have walked 10 minutes earlier along a nature path, I would love to hear the explanation, because I did find it suitably amusing when I lived there. Anyway, that is probably enough from me about Switzerland. I hope I have whet your appetite for maybe a visit to that country, for maybe going and buying some delicious Swiss-style cheese and creating your own fondue or your own tartiflette or maybe a rösti at home. Maybe you are inspired to try some of the Swiss sausage, a raclette, an afternoon snack platter maybe with some of the little cornichons and little pickled onions. So share with me what this has inspired for you. Do you feel like going and buying a bar of nice Swiss chocolate? Or are you completely horrified by all the foods that I have talked about in this episode and can't even get your head around how someone could live on all of those foods for 4 to 5 months? And I do wonder now if I could eat the same way. I'm not sure, because maybe just when you're out of home and out of your regular environment and you're doing something so completely different and you are doing such an inordinate amount of exercise in comparison to what you normally do, your body can cope with that incredible change in diet. I am sure I put on some weight in that period of time. I can't quite remember back. I'm sure I did though, but I certainly didn't get sick, didn't feel bad, and had plenty of energy for my job and to have an amazing time in Klosters in Switzerland. So I will leave you with that little thought from me. Get out there, guys. Be fearless. Try something new this week that you haven't tried before. Maybe Google a couple of little Swiss recipe options and give it a go. I might even pop some up on a blog on my own website, or maybe on the website here at worldpodcasts.com to inspire you. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, and I look forward to touching base with you next week. Bye.
The Fearless Kitchen Podcast.